This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 16th of December, 2021, the day after a Fed that delivered the hawkish anticipated shift, and we have a buy the fact reaction in the markets, at least in the equity market. We'll get to that in a moment. But Peter, I guess you'll be weaving that into your story today with the webinar you have up later today. You can see the where to sign up for that on slide two of today's slide deck. What are you be talking about and focusing on today, Peter?
Well, obviously, we'll start the presentation with sort of the initial reaction to the FOMC statement and what that new rate cycle that is in store for next year with three rate hikes. That's at least what is the market is pricing and what the Fed has agreed to, and what that really means going forward. So that's basically the main. And then I'll actually end the presentation with, kids around the world have a wish list for Christmas, and I've made a wish list for equities, what we like going into the new year. So I'll present that on the last slide. So that should be something for everyone, basically.
All right. And if we look at the headline market reaction, so we'll get to what the Fed actually delivered. But the bottom line is, or the headline is, that we didn't really shift anywhere at all on rate expectations for the forward curve, despite what the Fed shifted to in their policy statement and the various forecasts. But the market shifted higher in apparent, again, by the fact reaction to this. And you were pointing out in our internal meeting, you think this is really linked to that long end of the curve staying very stable and not going anywhere. So it looks like we'll be back to trend very quickly. You can see that rising trend line. It won't take many more percent higher in the S&P, at least, to get back to that rising trend, the top of the rising trend that we've seen since the summer of last year. But anything else you're taking away in terms of the mix of the reaction across the various sectors of the market here?
Yeah, so I mean, the reason why the 10-year is so important is people need to understand that. So equities is a very long duration asset, much longer than what you see in currencies or commodities or anything. So equities is basically pricing in the future, future growth. That's what it's really about. And that's why we use the long end of the yield curve to discount those future cash flows. And 10-year did nothing yesterday. A very, very mild, to say the least, reaction to that FOMC statement. So I think right now, in short term, the interpretation is that the Fed won't have the strength and the power to actually meaningfully push those longer term interest rates or push the interest rates higher, and they won't get to the other side of this entire cycle. I mean, that's so basically that's the risk of a flattening of the yield curve, because they will begin pushing up short end yield curve. You'll talk more about that in a few minutes. So with that staying flat, we have the NASDAQ up almost 4% from just minutes before the statement. All the mega cap, cybersecurity, next gen, and medicine was doing quite well. You could argue that e-commerce and bubble stocks, as you can see on slide three, were doing not so good. That might be a lag reaction there. But we do also have to take into consideration there is more than interest rates. There's also just basically headwind from coming out of the pandemic for some of these companies that did extremely well during the pandemic. So right now, I think short term, the catalyst is positive for equities. It's really a sigh of relief here on the interest rate side of things. So so that's it in equities, basically.
Yeah, and you can see that on slide four. I put on the right there, that is the September 2022 Eurodollar short-term interest rate future, and you can see in the reaction. So the day of the meeting, and actually during the meeting itself, there was a bit of a sell-off there, predicting even briefly new potential highs for the cycle or the cycle of expectations for next year. And that has been entirely pulled back into this morning. And so the headlines, initially, we saw the dollar reacting higher. We saw rates reacting higher because of the algos detecting that the Fed dot plot had placed the expectations for three rate hikes next year in the dot plot forecast, and pretty good consensus around that, as you can see on the dot plot graph I put in there in the middle of the slide. So not a lot of dispersion, which I was kind of hoping to see to make it sort of feel a bit more uncertain about what they would do. I think that would leave them more leeway to not embarrass themselves, which I suspect they're going to do one way or another next year. And then you see in the PCE forecast, of course, they're having to raise those for next year, raised it to 2.7% for the core PCE forecast for next year versus 2.3 in the September projection. And then growth, looking at the growth forecast, they're raised all the way to 4% from 3.8%. I think this looks very optimistic on their part. What if we get 3.5% core inflation and we get 2% real GDP growth, which I think is a more likely scenario for next year if we're getting inflation costs running hot next year, or inflation rates running hot next year. But, you know, the overall pull away or takeaway is, and my favorite one was from the FT's, I think his name is Robert Armstrong, but Armstrong is the last name anyway, saying, look, the Fed is basically saying in its mix of forecasts here that inflation is transitory, and a justifiable point of view, because if you look out at the 2.1% forecast for core PCE in 2024, the Fed is saying, yeah, well, we're going to hike rates a little bit and everything will be fine in a couple of years. I think it'll be a very interesting path towards discovering that that may not be the case. And to be fair, though, the market is essentially agreeing with the Fed, because as you pointed out, Peter, the terminal rate and those longer term rates still priced very low. And then on that front, I have a really big question. And I think it's really important to see what happens in the first couple of weeks of the new year, because we have these things I've talked about in the last couple of days, these factors that could be suppressing the U.S. yield curve. We have, of course, Omicron. I'm very optimistic. I have no scientific basis for that, except for some of the reports out there. But I'm optimistic that we're going to get over this Omicron hump, if you will, very quickly. That's, of course, potentially holding the market back. But even that aside, we have these big financial institutions reducing their balance sheets into year end in the U.S. because they want to avoid these regulatory penalties they have that are linked to their size. And they do that by offloading into treasuries. And that is one of the reasons, for example, if you look on slide 5, that reverse Fed reverse repo facility is growing once again, despite their asset purchase tapering. This is sort of like stored QE. And you can see this phenomenon a little bit at the beginning of this year. So look at that graph on the right, on the left. That is the U.S. 10-year Treasury yield, which was sort of capped below 1% into the end of 2020. And then in the first week of 2021, yields in the U.S. exploded higher. Of course, there was other news flow and other things happening at the time. But I think that's a very interesting timing for that move. I'm not saying it's going to repeat, but it is certainly something to watch for if this calendar roll does inspire a big shift in rates. I think that could have, of course, quite an impact across all asset classes. And then on the dollar reaction, so obviously with those yield expectations coming off quite sharply from yesterday's highs, we have the dollar weakening. And you can see that on slide 6, the euro dollar. I wonder if we put in a near-term low here. I have a hard time seeing how the ECB surprises on the dovish side today. There could be a relief rally and a squeeze above local resistance. And we got plenty of space up to where the levels look like a bigger structural move and reversal of this euro-dollar bear market, which would require really 115 plus. And then finally, to round out the FX space for now, at least, Australia looking for a reversal potential there as well. A big tactical line in the sand at 71.85-ish. So look at that on your Aussie dollar charts. But an absolute barn burner of an employment report, plus 366,000 jobs in an economy that's something on the order of a tenth the size of the U.S. economy. That's like non-farm payrolls printing at 4 million. And this is, of course, in fitting with the end of the lockdowns and the second month of that. And we're really springing back. Very impressive. The participation rate is rocketing back towards the cycle highs. Anecdotally hearing that it's almost impossible to book a cab in Sydney. And the unemployment rate back towards 4.6%, getting close to those lows since the global financial crisis. So with China stimulating around the corner, I think it's a very interesting story. And the RBA is going to be the next bank where we're looking for a central bank that is stumbling over itself and it's being behind the curve potentially next year. But yeah, we're not seeing that as much in the metal space, but we did see a sort of sympathetic action, something like silver, gold. These also headed a bit lower on those rate reactions going a bit higher, and then that reversed, and they also sort of jumped up from the lows of the session.
Yeah, absolutely, John. Some knee-jerk reactions also across the commodity space, as we've seen both in stocks and the dollar. So we hit a two-month low yesterday in gold. We hit a 2.5-month low in copper ahead of the announcement, only to see that most of those losses being recouped as we got that relief rally after the announcement. Looking ahead, we... Basically, the commodity space has been under some pressure since late November, when we had those pretty hawkish acceptance speeches by Powell and Brainard. And with the cat out of the bag now, and some of those that with the more clarity on the Fed's reaction function, we may see some of those some of those losses being recouped here. But in the short term, what is gold looking for? Well, it's clearly looking for a change in the the outlook for next year, where quite a few banks are looking for a sharp rally in real yields. And that's the main reason why many have gold to be forecast trading lower next year. That is, if we do see a flattening yield curve continued with most of the pressure on yields at the front end of the curve, then potentially that could be removing one of the main reasons for being bearish on gold. But right now, as you can see, the charts, it's not really telling us anything. And I'm not really standing here asking, coming with a firm view on this market. I believe we could see the market higher next year, especially in the industrial metals, where copper is right now being challenged by the outlook, short-term outlook for China. But we have to remember there's also expectation for growth outside of China towards the green transformation. So generally, a copper and a gold market, which is trading sideways, just look out for the upside. If you do break above these the 200-day moving average, and that's potentially something that could trigger some fireworks. If we look towards the more liquid part of the commodity space, crude oil, it has also recovered yesterday. I think the market is a bit torn between the short term and the bit longer term outlook. The short term outlook points towards softening fundamentals. We can see that here on slide 8 with the forward curve, where we've seen this, very elevated backwardation has come down. It's almost more than half now during the past months or so. That's the top right, where you can see the one-year roll yield is down below 5% now. It was above 10% a month ago. Also, speculators have cut their net lens to the lowest in more than a year. So we're probably entering the 22 with a bit of a softening market. And then as we see spare capacity being wind down, then we'll start to see a stronger market towards the later part of 22.
All right. Now, we talked a little bit earlier about Chinese stimulus potential, but that hasn't necessarily meant that we've seen a rebound in Chinese equities. And we see a very unique policy mix out there where there's pressures on some sectors and support for others. So what's you've got a slide here on Chinese equities, Peter. What are you trying to show us here?
Well, I'm trying to show that basically China is totally decoupling from the rest of global equities. This is the CSI 300 total return versus S&P 500. And you can see we're at a close to a low point for the cycle of the past 5 years. And I think this is really, accelerating the exodus of foreign investors pulling out of China. So one thing is their technology crackdown. We have the Hang Seng Tech Index, floating with a new low in today's session, or was it the day before? So it's really a lot of weakness. And now you have, they have the housing sector that is weak, and now you have the semi, one of the largest semiconductors in China is really, really also getting in troubles, and there's a state-backed rescue of that semiconductor, so which is really a key priority technology for China. So there's lots of trouble in many places, also on the supply side of things, because of the zero case policy there that the government is pursuing. And then on the demand side, we have recently seen that retail sales is coming down pretty dramatically. So it's potentially linked to the housing weakness, which is pulling down confidence among consumers in China.
Yeah, such a dramatic just a dramatic contrast there, where China is in the cycle and where the U.S. is in the cycle. And specifically for property, of course, the crackdown in China affecting that sector very heavily, especially the equities and financing linked to that. Whereas in the U.S., we saw another NAHB housing market survey near the top of the cycle, 20% annual year-on-year gains in housing in the U.S., just a rip-roaring market. And with the long end of the U.S. yield curve doing nothing and even falling a little bit recently, there's certainly no pressure there just yet. I guess here we are. Next week is essentially the last week ahead of some important holidays. Obviously, the earnings season just about disappearing until we get into, mid-January?
Yes, so you're absolutely correct, John. I mean, the earnings season is non-existing, and we're moving into the holiday season. So, but then Q4 will be done, and it will be very interesting times when we get to mid-January, because we'll have the Q4 earnings, and we'll really see whether the trend of profit margins being under pressure, whether that will continue. But if you look at slide 10, today's two most important earnings are from FedEx and Adobe. FedEx, interesting, because they are they are carrying different types of packages related to the e-commerce supply chain, also delivering other types of packages. And FedEx has been having these issues with labor shortages in the U.S. That one of their key hubs in the Midwest was running at a 65%, if I recall, 65% capacity utilization because they couldn't get. Now it was their Portland, sorry, so not the Midwest, but it was the Portland in Oregon, 65%. Capacity, and they had to redirect, and we have had all these rising costs associated with delivering packages. That's also why when you look at the financials I have inserted there, that the 12-month running EBITDA margin is only 10%, and that's down from almost 15% in the fiscal year that ended in May 2020. So you can see there is a lot of margin compression. They also have the issue of doing a lot of investments to build out new fulfillment centers and investing a lot in people. So this is a slow grinding effort to get the operating margins closer to a long-term average. And at the same time, there is very, you know, a muted expectations for parcels volume growth next year, because and that's something that will hit a lot of companies next year, John. I mean, in terms of equities, because a lot of industries have had enormous amount of growth from all this stimulus, but then as we go into 2022, you know, because of the base effects, you kind of continue to grow at those rates. You also have a little bit of maybe a fiscal drag in many countries. So 2022 will be a year with growth coming down versus recently, and you have those rising input costs from the commodity sector and energy prices. So it will be a very fine balancing act, trying to improve profitability. And then at the same time, if we finally get the long end of the yield curve moving a little bit towards those 2%, then you have a really ugly mix where they have to juggle higher discount rates on the cash flows, trying to, you know, improve profitability if they can, and they have to manage expectations on growth coming down. So it will be a very different year next year for equities, but that's that talk is for another day, I think.
Yeah, and also with the Fed tapering, that's been another, you can draw some direct comparisons with the expansion of the Fed balance sheet and equities and vice versa. So interesting to see how this this transition shapes up into the new year, and of course what happens in the new year as well. All right, let's look at today in terms of the economic calendar, and it is a busy one. I don't think I've ever put this many items on a single day's economic calendar. It's on slide 11, and just a cavalcade of central banks. I don't want to go through these one by one, a couple worth flagging. Norwegian Central Bank will be out announcing before we even get this podcast live. There maybe is some doubt at the margin whether they actually go today because the whole country is shutting down on COVID. Does it play too badly at the headline to see a rate cut? A rate hike when there's shutdowns? I don't think it really alters the calculus for the coming few months if they delay it until the next meeting. But just putting it out there, could see some intraday volatility. Obviously, it's in the rearview mirror as the listeners are listening to this. Turkish rate announcement. We have a desperate fall in the Turkish lira. I think we're getting close to the point where we see either some sort of strict capital controls, or I think the interesting scenario would be a savior. I won't put out any names, but there are some regional players with deep pockets that could be interested in propping up the Turkish financial system. Be aware of that. If you have any exposure to the Turkish lira, there's certainly two-way risks there. If something comes out of the blue that alters the narrative, they are supposedly looking to cut rates once again, but I don't think that's what's going to determine the future of the lira. obviously, unless they were to hike 500 basis points and call elections, that would be a very different outcome for Turkey as well. Bank of England, I'm not expecting a hike today. They just posted a record daily figure for COVID cases. They want to sit on their hands until the next meeting. So probably in line with expectations there. ECB, I don't know what they're going to say, but I think I have a hard time seeing them surprising on the dovish side, but we have to look at their forecast. Let's look out for the CPI adjustment higher. That would be the key thing that would, I think, potentially support the euro here, as the expectations are from noises I've heard, at least unconfirmed, that they are planning on recycling their expectations that inflation will remain below 2% next year. I think that would be play badly if they do that. ECB press conference, obviously, as well. Those tend to be very boring under the regime of Lagarde. And then we have Mexico expected to hike rates later today. The latest weekly initial jobless claims from the U.S. after that record low figure, adjusted for population, of course, last week. And a Bank of Japan meeting overnight where expectations are essentially nil. So plenty to occupy us, certainly for individual currencies. I didn't even mention some of the other central banks out meeting today. We have the flash PMIs out of Europe this morning and UK and the U.S. Later as well. So keep an eye on all of that. And let's see where all of this lands tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.